Welcome, everybody, to episode 347 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, February 27th, 2019. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by Jay Tripp. And
hello.
Spring is on the horizon.
Not here.
Thank God.
Not here. It's freezing here and cold, and it snowed yesterday some more. There is no spring here. It'll never be spring.
This past weekend, we had 60-mile-an-hour winds almost all day, and that was scary.
But yeah,
it was kind of interesting because I'm like, you know, the last time we had winds like this that battered the house was Hurricane Sandy, and it turns out, you know, according to the local weather forecasters, that was the last time we had 60-mile-an-hour winds for a prolonged period of time was the remnants of Hurricane Sandy, which was scary.
We had crazy winds in drifting here that resulted in, like, Wisconsin's largest vehicle pileup on the freeway somewhere around, I think, Neenah, Wisconsin. It was like 100 cars or more. There wasn't even snowing at the time. It was just so windy that all the snow was just blowing across the freeway and no one could see anything. And then everyone, just piles up scary. There's lots of like photos and video. Maybe not safe for work. Some of the stuff's pretty scary, but, it was incredible. The weather here has just been unbelievable. Carrie and I talked about it quite a bit. Like, there's so much snow here. It is piled up 12 feet high, 15, 20 feet high in some places. Just the plows keep plowing it up. And there might be this much snow in the season, but not usually all at once like this. So,
and yet we have green grass.
No, sucks to be here. You.
So we're going to talk about an assortment of WordPress news items today since we've got the time. For those watching the video portion of the show, I have a new piece of equipment in my office.
That's right,
and that is a new chair. Turns out the other day, I was just sitting here in my Herman Miller, very expensive Herman Miller gift chair, broke. One of the side pieces broke off, and I think it couldn't handle my 250-pound figure anymore, and the plastic just gave way. I think I heard it scream too just before it busted off the chair. But the seat fell down, and because it's a mesh, there are metal parts and stuff underneath the seat. And thankfully, there are no facility noodle injuries. You know, if you're a fan of the Seinfeld, so you know, I had that going for me. So I went to Staples the other day, which Staples is still around. You know, that was my first surprise. My second surprise is that they have an assortment of chairs. And hey, if you're a remote worker, you sit in the office all day, what's more important than a chair? Mm-hmm. Although nowadays, a lot of people have stand-up desks, so there's no chair involved. But right. I actually, you know, I treat shopping for chairs as, you know, shopping for a mattress. You got to sit in them. You got to adjust in them. You got to go up and down. And I was actually looking for something that had lower and upper back support, because the previous chair, I would end up.
Do you remember which one it was? Was it an Aeron?
Yeah. It was a Herman Miller Aeron chair, which had all kinds of features and at the time was really comfortable. But I would notice that, and it's probably due to bad posture on my part, partly, but when sitting in the chair, there'd be this space. I'd be leaning forward a bit to do stuff, and I'd end up getting this sharp, burning lower pain in the bottom right part of my back. So I actually went shopping for a chair, and I was looking for a chair that had a tall back. And the one I purchased is actually a gaming chair for about $200. Not necessarily because, you know, I'm using it primarily sitting here for gaming, but it has a pillow that I can add to just below my neck around my shoulder blade area. It has lower lumbar support, and the seat is pretty sturdy itself. And I'm able to have my feet flat on the ground, sit straight, and able to do what I need to do at the desk. And it feels a heck of a lot better than my previous chair. So I guess the chair breaking was sort of a blessing in disguise.
So I've got an Embody, just kind of a Mark Jake with it recommended the Embody a long time ago, and that I've had at the office. But ergonomics is tough because it really is just all about comfort. Everybody's body is, you know, not the golden ratio here. They're different. Everybody's version of what's comfortable is different. So I really like the Embody, but sometimes for like long sessions, like I know you're not supposed to be sitting in a chair for 4, 6, 8 hours at a time anyways. So that's a bad habit. But it's not necessarily the most comfortable chair I guess I've ever owned. It is adjustable. It is comfortable, but you know, if you're going to be primarily sitting, working, gaming, whatever, at a desk, you do want something a little bit more padded. Or and I was surprised that the Aeron or the Embody didn't have a headrest option. Somebody made an aftermarket headrest for the Aeron, but not the Embody. And so your chair, looking at it now, has a big, it's a big, nice big headrest and a little shoulder pad and everything. I mean, it's.
This is the baby right here. This keeps my back straight up. It's nice.
And that's the thing with, I mean, traveling, sitting in an airplane, driving for road trips, whatever, like sitting straight up and finding a seat that fits your body is really hard. So and we talked about it a little bit off the show, but the nice thing about the Herman Miller chairs is the warranty on them. So if something does break, and so I've never had anything break on mine, fortunately, yet, but I think they mostly have a 12-year warranty on stuff. So maybe you'll be able to get it fixed and have a nice
day. Well, I put it in the garage, so it's keeping the lawnmower and other things company in there, but maybe I'll look into getting it fixed through the warranty. But this chair, even if I got that chair fixed, I'd be using this chair just because it's more comfortable. And speaking of chairs and chair shopping, I sat in the Lazy Boy chair, which was awesome, but I'm like, I'd have to lean forward if I wanted to do things in it at the computer, and I'd probably fall asleep in it, which is something I really don't want to fall asleep at my desk. But as I was looking at the things that they advertise, the different points of differential points between chairs, they have recommended hours of usage. So this one is rated between 5 and 10 or 4 and 8 or something like that. And then some chairs are rated between 1 and 5. And a lot of these chairs have weight limits. So a lot of chairs can't handle more than 250 pounds, which, I was like, whoa, well, that's most chairs I can't sit in, apparently, or they can't support me. So, but this one has a 275-pound rating and seems to be doing okay for now, but we'll see how long that lasts. Poor plastic.
I think it's interesting that, I mean, not that this is super relevant for our audience exactly, but there is a trend of
chair shopping out weekly.
Of everything out there being kind of getting the gamer tag, like everything from chairs to video cards to enclosures to mice and keyboards, and I think it's interesting how that has kind of become a status sort of I mean it implies better without it maybe necessarily always being better, but in the, you know, how many times do you sit down and play a game in a chair for 5 minutes at a time? No, usually you sit down and you play Red Dead Redemption for 9 hours at a time or something, you know. So I think a gaming chair actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and if you look at a lot of the chairs that the streamers use on Twitch, they've got headrests, they've got bucket seats, they've got padded. Yep. I mean, they take care of themselves. They sit in comfort. Right. Anyway, so let's move on to some pressing topics of the week, pun intended. And we'll start off with a bit of drama that John wanted to get to last week, but no, I wanted to save it for this week. But the Yoast CEO has responded to hashtag YoastCon Twitter controversy. CEO Rikman Derak, I probably butchered that name, I'm sorry, but she's the CEO. She's actually Yoast DeVolk's wife of Yoast, makers of the WordPress SEO plugin. She published a post addressing the controversy that dominated the YoastCon hashtag on Twitter in the days leading up to the YoastCon conference, an SEO event that Rand Fishkin and some other SEO noted personalities attended. And as it turns out, I was actually watching this sort of unfold. I think Carl Hancock was the first person that pointed it out on Twitter, and he says the YoastCon hashtag is looking a little grim. So I checked it out, and there is an individual, maybe a group of individuals, but one primary individual who was publishing tweets from 10 years ago, mixed up videos of Yoast drinking large bottles of champagne, and there are these big-breasted women at an after party or some type of event. Maybe it was in Vegas. It just looked very bad, and especially the tweets that were published so long ago. But as we found out that the tweets were friendly in nature, they were by two consenting adults. With all that said, though, it's still, you know, 10 years later, somebody digging this up, it still looks poorly on the company. In the direct, she referenced a post from Jacille Navarro, a woman who has been working in the SEO industry for 10 years, and she says that she totally agreed with her post and that the SEO industry was not welcoming to women 10 years ago. And although some things may have changed, she still thinks that the SEO industry has a long way to go. I also think the problem is much bigger than the SEO industry.
For sure.
And no, she's right about that. I mean, the problem stems from tech to blue collar. It stems everywhere. Everywhere there's an issue with women in the workplace. So it goes way beyond the SEO industry. And if we take a look at the Yoast Twitter account, they actually deleted a huge chunk of tweets, which I don't know, may have been a gut reaction, something that they just decided to do right then and there. But they used the Twitter account used to have more than 44,000 tweets. Approximately 33,000 tweets have been deleted in the wake of the controversy. Now, I don't think there's 33,000 bad tweets. I think they just did a blanket delete from a certain time frame back. And, you know, and looking at this, I personally think that it was a bit of an attack, personal attack. I think this person and these people held on to this information and waited for the right opportunity or for the right time. Maybe they've been slighted in the past. I'm not sure. But Yoast came out. He apologized on Twitter. He apologized for the hashtag. And all of the interactions I've seen. Now this is 10 years ago. And things – it drives me nuts in this day and age. I mean, look at Kevin Hart with his routines that he's done his comedy routines he's done in the past, other people, what they've said in the past 10, 12 years ago. By and large, I think for the most part, even in Yoast Valk's case, it's not a reflection of who these people are today. And I hate the fact that we dig these things up, that these mistakes that we've made in the past, and we want to chastise people and sort of ruin their lives by bringing it up today, even though I mean, 10 years is a long time.
It is a long time. It's, you know, for some folks, I mean, I don't know how old that they are exactly, but that's 33% or 30% of somebody's life ago. So most folks are a different person every 10 years. So they're in a different place. They live in a different area of the world. They have a different job. 10 years is a long time to change.
The honest truth is, if Yoast would say any of the things, Yoast Valk would say any of the things he did 10 years ago on Twitter today, he'd be ripped apart. He'd be shunned from the WordPress community. His business would be a sharp drop in business. He could not get away with that. I mean, it was a different time. There's different things, different contexts. There's consenting adults. They were jokingly being friendly. They knew. Each person knew what they were saying and how they were saying it to each other, and all the people who got to witness it as onlookers took it out of take it out of context.
Twitter was a different platform 10 years ago. People used it differently 10 years ago than they use it now. I agree that the timing on that looks really suspect. Who waits until the Yoast Con is happening to start promoting the things that happened 10 years ago or more? Frankly, the bulk deleting of tweets is something I would love to figure out how everyone is actually doing, because I've got 30,000 tweets that I frankly could do without that really just are stupid, pointless, aimless tweets about nothing that don't matter and that could all get deleted and nobody would care. And so why not just purge them? Twitter is not the place to leave long-lasting philosophical thoughts. Might as well, I think, totally purge them. I think that aside from generally kind of agreeing with everything you said, that everyone handled all of this about as well as you could. I mean, I think the post really summed up.
Here's how crazy it was. When this was going on the Yoast hashtag, people thought that the Yoast hashtag or the Yoast account was hacked.
Right. We're not really trained to look at the dates on these things either. You see the tweet and you think that it's now. You don't think it was 10 years ago. And then when you see it was from 10 years ago, your initial reaction is, well, why does that matter? Why, wait, what? How am I even looking at this? What does this have to do with anything? Oh, well, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. This is someone attacking somebody else, right? Like, I guess everyone's going to react to it differently, but the drama aside, because these are all adults doing adult things, making adult decisions. That is has nothing to do, I feel like, necessarily. I mean, the overarching problem is a different topic, but I thought that the summary post, what was it titled exactly? I'm loading it up. Let's create a more female-friendly world is the right approach to responding to the entire ordeal, the entire situation. Is turned this into a message and something that everyone else can read and learn from and better understand how to make all of this. How to kind of gently, but also very still firmly convey what the real life problems are here. And then what exactly can or should necessarily be done about them from a woman's point of view, from a target of, I mean, what I would consider to be harassment's point of view. I mean, being the CEO of Yoast and seeing these tweets come back during YoastCon, this feels very targeted. And I mean, from the personal side of it, as being married to the other victim involved in this. I mean, there is a lot to unravel in this particular story. And I feel like everybody replied to this and responded to it and was open about it very, very well. Better than I feel like I probably would have handled it myself, frankly.
And Yoast DeValk and his wife admitted that the tweets and videos are indefensible, but they are not representative of their company's current push to empower women. And we've seen initiatives recently and in within the last 2 or 3 years of trying to get more women involved, bring women higher up in within the company, shine more of a spotlight on empowering women. So, I mean, like you said, I think everybody kind of responded as best they could. And I'm actually happy for the fact that they said it's indefensible. I mean, look, these things happen. I mean, they're admitting that. I mean, we've seen it. There's nothing, you can't hide behind it. You can't just come out and say, yeah, these things happened, but that was 10 years ago. This is now. Look what we're doing now. It's completely not who we are today. We've grown, we've learned. And like I said, if any of this stuff took place today, Yoast SEO would be very bad.
Conversation.
There'd be such a huge uproar within the WordPress community of there is no way that that this would happen today.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I'm happy we talked about it because this is one of those. It reaches outside of WordPress, not only just on the SEO side of it, but in the for any of our, I feel like, listeners that work at in a distributed way or at a corporate office or a co-working.
The conditions for women working anywhere need to improve. Right. And I'm all for if a woman can do a job as good, if not better, than a male, then she should be paid as much, if not more, than the male. I don't understand why it's not like that. But it all has to do with the people who are in power in the male-dominated industries and the influences so many people have in these industries, and it's nuts, man.
It is a pretty frustrating time to like be like for society right now to have all of these things be so new and feel so wrong. Like, you know, it is only dozens of years ago that the things like equality actually started to be things that were on people's minds. And that, frankly, is really bizarre. It seems so obvious.
It seems like we should be way beyond that by now, but we're not.
Yeah. So, I mean, we all kind of know how we got here, I guess, but it feels like the solution should be easier. Like, just stop treating people differently. And I don't know how we transition from here, but I'm happy either way.
Here's how we transition. WordPress 5.1 Betty. Hey, there we go. Was released a few days ago. She was an American jazz singer, Betty Carter. And this is the first major release since Gutenberg came into core. This is the sort of release as part of the Tighten Up sort of overarching theme of WordPress releases. And as we've talked about in the past, this release has a new database table to store metadata associated with multi-site networks. The Cron API has new functions to assist with returning data, new filters for modifying Cron storage. There's a new JavaScript build process. There's updates to values for the WP debug log constant, improved taxonomy, metabox sanitization, and of course, improvements to the block editor as well. There's also a couple features that were introduced from the Site Health project. So WordPress will now detect if a site is running on an insecure, outdated version of PHP and display a notice in the dashboard with information about how to update PHP. It also includes checks for PHP version compatibility with plugins. So WordPress 5.1 Plus will actually prevent users from installing plugins that require newer versions of PHP than they have running. So here we go. I mean, we're finally starting to make progress and steps in the right direction to try and get the whole moving towards newer versions of PHP without necessarily WordPress having to stomp its feet on the ground and say, that's it from here on out. You know, we demand that, you know, web host upgrade to this version of PHP, which people have been arguing for the past couple of years, you know, WordPress using its clout to demand that this sort of thing happens. But, you know, maybe this is more of the logical approach to do it. I don't know. We'll have to see.
It's the first time that WordPress is choosing to expose some of the platform or the projects.
Well, you're right, because one of the arguments for not doing it was there's no reason why the end user should have to know or worry about PHP versions.
That's right. This is the first time. I mean, Browse Happy, and it was at least something that users could fix. So introducing users to the underside of WordPress, the server side things that users may not necessarily have a ton of direct influence or ability to change, represents a very new direction for WordPress as a project. And I'm happy to see that this feature ship, but I am curious to see what, if any, results come from this. If users are confused, or if hosting companies do feel the pressure, or both, or neither, because I was on the other side of it, thinking that, you know, we shouldn't necessarily be burdening users with information about things that they can't directly fix themselves. But that my opinion is not the majority. So I'm excited to see the results of. Whenever there are some, hopefully it's positive.
With 5.1 out the door, we now look towards the future of WordPress 5.2. And Gary Pendergast published a post on the Make blog about the WordPress 5.2 proposed schedule and scope. And his proposed schedule is to have a beta 1 on March 14th with a release candidate on April 10th with a general release of April 23rd. The scope is towards Gutenberg, possibly working on a block manager, and he points to the CodeBlocks plugin as an idea of something that could possibly be integrated into core. The Site Health Check plugin, getting that fully integrated into core. PHP Error Protection, which was almost at the last minute removed to be included in the 5.1. That might be in 5.2. Something that I know Eric Mann is very happy to see is the possibility of update package signing, which is something we've talked about before, where I believe updates would get an actual, like, official signing. Would it be like a hash? Yep. And you'd be able to, WordPress would be able to recognize if it's coming from a trusted source.
Correct.
So you wouldn't have to worry about spoofing.
Yep. You'll always know that what you're downloading or installing is exactly what it says that it is.
And I wanted to bring this up, and this gave me a chuckle. Maybe this will give you a chuckle too. But about the WordPress 5.2 schedule, Gary Pendergast says, the end of April does have quite a few observed holidays to account for. The weekend of April 20th, 21st is Easter. The week of April 20th, 27th is Passover. And the weekend of April 27th to the 28th is Orthodox Easter. The following week includes May Day and is the week before the start of Ramadan. I would like to propose April 23rd as a reasonable compromise that isn't an observed holiday for most people and allows several days after the release for sites to test and upgrade, end quote. Which just kind of blew my mind after the whole Gutenberg WordPress 5.0 release around the Christmas holiday. So
that's right.
I don't know. Maybe they learned a thing or two, and maybe they're going to account for holidays and dates now and future releases.
It is going to be tough, though, right? Because even WordCamp US this year is November 1st?
October, I think it is. End of October,
which is... you know, a lot of parents that have kids look forward to trick-or-treating on October 31st with their kids. And so you can't get around every holiday. It's just impossible. So, yeah, Gary's trying very hard. Friend of the show, Gary Pendergast, trying really hard to find to kick the field goal here. He's trying to work between the posts to make this right. And there's a lot going on at the end of April, but looks like he's kind of got it nailed down. I think that makes sense.
And speaking of WordPress 5.2, it will be led by Matt Mulloway, and the release coordinator will be Josepha Hayden. And they're looking at possibly having a major feature release lead, so someone that, you know, merges tickets or what has you for major features in WordPress. Sarah Gooding and WP Tarrant actually took a closer look at the proposed block manager, and she was looking at the Gutenberg manager and disable Gutenberg blocks plugins. So there are plugins that are already out there that try to achieve the task of being able to disable and enable blocks. And CoBlocks by Rich Taber is a pretty nice looking, elegant UI user experience that he's introduced to CoBlocks, where you can actually disable entire categories of blocks. So if you don't have any use for the embed blocks, you could turn them off, or you could turn off blocks individually. And it appears as though now that we're starting to see these bundles of blocks, that a block manager is increasing in demand. Based on the install counts for these plugins, and just you have all these blocks. What if I don't want to use all these blocks? What if I want to hide the ones I don't use? So it looks like block management is going to be a higher priority for WordPress 5.2, and we'll have to see if it gets into that version or maybe gets into 5.3.
The block manager, I mean, this is, again, you know, spot the trend, but this is one of those things that I know is going to end up in WordPress admin and as a core feature, but I really wish that it wasn't necessary. Like, there are so many other complexities that come with being able to turn a block on and off that people are going to want, and that are going to cause problems with people that add blocks and plugins or themes, or that you publish a bunch of posts that have blocks in them and then disable the block, or then you want blocks so that certain authors can use them or not others. There are so many little gotchas that come with turning blocks.
So if you turn off a block, you need to build in a check to say, wait a minute, these number of posts are using this block, and you would end up removing content from your site.
Correct. And you can't do that because you can't query for posts that contain certain blocks because they're all pre-compiled in post content. So in order for this to be user safe and friendly for everyone who is using blocks and multiple blocks and plugins that include blocks and everything else, this is one of those things that if people really do want this feature, there is going to be a lot of additional work that will need to be done to support a lot of the additional features that people are going to expect for a feature like this to have out of the box that it frankly, technically just will not be able to have. So this is
when you say that, it sounds like it'd be better off to just let's explore concepts and ideas and then maybe put something on, you know, propose something for 5.3.
I mean, this will be something that is going to, yeah. I mean, the first easy version of this is just going to be something that turns blocks on and off. But again, the problem with each one of these features like this is that it ends up needing updates and then it stops at on or off. Add post type support, does theme support. Like all of these little features were kind of built in and then nothing ever happened with them. So either the folks that are looking at building these features out are going to do a better job than WordPress has ever done in the past of adding features to these things, or the way that blocks are stored in the database needs to actually make the advanced versions of these features possible. And because right now it's not, it's just no way.
I'm thinking about, you know, how there's the ability to assign widgets to appear on this page, but not on this page, or you have the user roles and capabilities. Mm-hmm. Oh man, now it sounds like we're going to need a complex block manager to handle granular control of blocks.
And those are features that people always wanted in WordPress core with widgets and shortcodes that never happened. And when they did happen, this was sort of, this was like Jen Milo's name for this was context aware sidebars and widgets and shortcodes. And they weren't really easily achieved, because of the intersection of all of the different areas of users, archives, single posts, post types, taxonomies, terms, all the things.
And the plugins, like for widget display, it was pretty much an if this, then that type of plugin.
Correct. And so just the way that plugins are on or off or themes are on or off, we're going to have a switch for blocks that are on or off. And then
only turn on if you're on this page, but off if you're on this page, but on if you're on this post type, and off if you're on.
The thing with blocks is that I can see wanting to maybe, and maybe this is an opportunity for Justin Tadlock and the members plugin or others, where you want to enable certain blocks for certain user roles. An editor could use a block that maybe a contributor or an author couldn't, or what have you. But for right now, that's not how this is going to work. Either you can publish or you can't. And the idea of disabling a block or turning a block off is not any different, really, than if you completely uninstalled a plugin that that removes the block support completely anyways. So what's the difference between registering 50 blocks but then turning 40 of them off? You're still loading in all this block-related code, and all that you're doing is just right at the end saying, no, thank you. You're not really saving you're not gaining anything. You're doing all the work to then just disable the block.
Imagine running a large multi-site network and you decide, you know, I don't want to have people have access to this block anymore. We don't need it. Oh, I just so happened to remove content from about 30 of the 120 blogs we host.
Or you end up with the fallback commented HTML block that's still in post content that just doesn't know how to render itself. You are nuking, or from a different perspective, accidentally censoring folks that are relying on or using those blocks previously. I can see why people think that they want this, but frankly, I think that the ability to disable a block is a slippery slope for a lot of installs. So,
I'm glad you brought that up, because I didn't think of it. I thought, hey, this is a pretty nice feature. Yeah, we got all these blocks. Maybe I don't want to see these. But then I didn't realize that if you already have them in use, well, now you got to get notified somehow, one way or another, that this block is already in use. You know, what happens to that content? Does it disappear or does a simplified version of that content show up? Right. And then what about this? What about that? And now you got to start handling all the if this, then that statements in the plugin. Like, so yeah, this is more complex than it looks on paper.
We don't give users the opportunity to disable categories or tags in a UI. Like we don't, there isn't a UI to disable comments. Like there's a UI to turn them off, but there isn't a UI to just disable these features. If a block is a feature, and if the problem is that there are just too many blocks and that the interface is unmanageable, then that is an interface problem. That is not a technology feature problem. We don't turn off pages or posts. You don't turn off users or those kind of things. Features like registration, you can turn off. That makes sense. Off by default anyways. But WordPress didn't get to where it is by giving everyone all the time the fine-grained control to accidentally damage the content on their site by disabling things wholesale. So different plugins that serve different purposes, maybe. BuddyPress turn off full features because that isn't what people want. BBPress turn off favorites, subscriptions, whatever. You're turning off or disabling features because the user base in those plugins is coming from a different direction where what they want is actually more or fewer features. But you don't install a plugin that gives you blocks and then disable the blocks. I don't follow.
I do.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe,
yeah,
maybe
say it.
And maybe there are plugins that come with 10 different blocks and you only want one of them. I get that. But before you can safely disable a block, we need a way to be able to search all posts to see if a block was in use, to know whether or not you're damaging your existing content. We could maybe do that with a like query. It's going to be pretty awful on sites that have lots of posts that have long form content. I mean, and that's what'll probably happen. But I think it needs more discussion before it gets necessarily rushed into the next release. And these are all things I really am just thinking of off the top of my head while we're talking about it. I haven't voiced any of these concerns or opinions anywhere in Slack or on track or anything else. And that hopefully others have, or I can, but
do you know who Jeffrey Zeldman is?
I may have heard of Jeffrey Zeldman once or twice. How do you tell me who?
So about 6 years ago, Zeldman joined Automatic's advisory board. He's one of the founding members of Happy Cog. Mm-hmm. And it turns out recently that he's now been promoted, depending on how you look at it, from being on the advisory board to an actual Automatic employee. He announced on Twitter back on February 20th that he signed on as a creative director of a special projects team at Automatic that helps showcase WordPress at its best. He says that he'll share a first impression soon. Currently, he's too busy learning. And just like it doesn't matter who you are, but when you get hired on to Automatic, you have to do a support rotation. So your first 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks, you're doing the support forms and you're handling support for the company. So I don't know what the special projects team is, what they do, what their purpose is. But, you know, on paper, this sounds like a reimagination of the WordPress showcase, perhaps.
I don't know, we'll have to see. If my memory
read between the lines here and tell me what you see.
So if I remember correctly, I think the special projects team within the internal walls of Automatic kind of is their Skunkworks group. Like it's the folks that work on things that may never see the light of day, that work on either like special requests or VIP type things that come to Matt or Automatic as an organization, where someone wants to try and do something a little bit outrageous with WordPress, that Automatic has a team internally that is tasked to take that on. regardless of whether or not anyone will ever see it. It reminds me a little bit of the way that Brad Williams and the folks over at Web Dev Studios used to talk about their Starbucks and BuddyPress site. You know, this internal network that most folks will never see, but they were able to work on behind the scenes and eventually able to show off. And so it sounds to me that
we know Matt just he enjoys just trying things. Just do it. Just even if it doesn't see the light of day, there's probably something, or there's one or two things we could take from that. We can learn from that to apply to something else.
That's right. And so it sounds to me like Jeffrey Zeldman is found a pretty cool place to work for a little while. Like that, if, knowing Jeffrey's background and what he's always experimented with throughout his legacy on the web, it's pretty cool. And also knowing Jeffrey's using and WordPress for multiple different things for a very long time, knowing that Matt and Jeffrey have known each other for, again, a very long time, I'm really happy for kind of both Matt and everyone at Automatic that gets to hang out with Jeffrey a little bit more, and even for Jeffrey working with the special projects team, if it's what I remember maybe hearing about it possibly being, then sounds like a pretty cool game.
Me and Zelman share the same first name, so that's cool. I got that going for me.
Yeah, Jeff, you're more of a Jeff Rowe.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that is my name on Twitter.
Jeffrey.
So before we get to some of the most pressing issues people have with WordPress these days, I was shocked. I tell you, I was shocked. And I was in awe that you hinted to some BB Press features on Twitter.
There's a couple of things that are in 2.6 that I haven't had the chance to really talk about or show off. So there's a couple of things in there that are pretty cool. The upgrader, the converter tool that Stephen Edgar has largely maintained for the past few years has a couple of new converter APIs to help migrate from. I think we've probably got almost 20 different platforms that you could migrate into BB Press to now, a couple of updates went to the repair tools or the upgrade UI. Because forums are complicated pieces of software. And so managing all of the relationships and upgrading data when sometimes you might have hundreds of thousands of pieces of content, there's a lot of under-the-hood things that went into BBPress 2.6 that will eventually make their way into the release blog post whenever it's actually time to ship that thing.
All right. So a couple of days ago, I asked something. Sometimes I do this on Twitter, but I asked people, I said, what is your most pressing issue or concern with WordPress these days? Sometimes just get a pulse for what people are thinking about and what concerns them. So I'm not going to read any names. If you want to, you can go find the post on Twitter. But I wanted to run through some of the responses people said here, and we could talk about them. You could tell me what you think about them. So the first one is, supporting both Gutenberg and Classic Editor is like having two different platforms. There is no end in sight for this dual path. I could see that being an issue. This person replies, no folders in media. Now, I know more granular media management has been a pressing issue for many people for a very long time. And I, quite frankly, I don't know if it will ever be addressed, you know, at this point.
A lot of folks have put some time into multiple plugins to provide categories and taxonomies for media, but I think people are really more concerned about the file structure on the server, like where and how to organize the files there. Adding taxonomies is easy, but deeply organizing the files themselves on a server is not always as easy. So I was, there was a, I mean, we've talked about it on the show about the classic editor in Gutenberg before, but you know, you're good. I think we are just stuck maintaining both forever. I think it's unrealistic to expect that bicycles go away just because there's cars now. There will always be both.
The classic editor, I believe, is now the seventh most installed plugin.
Millions of installs. Yeah, there's a lot.
And I responded to a comment that says, well, all those users are just running on borrowed time. But I don't know. Maybe they're not.
I don't think they are. I think if they are, it's only because everyone chooses to push them out in a way. But I don't think that's fair to. It is like saying that you gotta no more bike trails, no more bicycles. You're gonna stop selling bikes, and everyone needs a car. Cars aren't for everyone. They are expensive to buy and own and maintain. There's a lot of overhead to a car if all you need to do is ride a bike a little bit of a ways. And so the metaphor, I think, is
we're going to need like a Gutenberg happy plugin where it gives you notification. Right. Go to the Gutenberg editor, you know?
Right. Eventually.
like we do with PHP versions or anything else. You know, now we're going to need a site health check plugin filter for editors. Or something. This person responded, same as always, a lack of strong leadership and vision for core development. That one seems to never go away. This person says, not having enough time and energy to contribute and to keep up to date with changes as I wished. And I think many people are in that camp. This reply, that themes is lagging behind the theme directory. There are weak previews, only a single screenshot, no formatting in the description, etc. It could be a lot better if it worked like the plugins directory. Now, that's a pressing issue, and I have to fully agree, and this is something that's been harped on over the past few years, but there was a recent Twitter thread that Brian Krogsgaard over at PostStatus he brought up on Twitter. People got involved in the conversation. And Samuel Otto Wood, who works on the WordPress Meta team, which is the WordPress website and all things kind of systems related to on the back end of WordPress, site related, I should say, he said that based on some improvements and changes that WordPress has had recently, that he's willing to go back in and take a look and see how, if any of the improvements they've been discussing can be made to the WordPress theme directory preview structure. Because right now, If you preview a theme, it just looks terrible.
it's been broken for years.
Yes.
Broken for years. For a while, it worked on the first page. You'd click on a theme preview, and it would kind of work. And then any other link you'd click would go right back to whatever the active theme was. It's been that way for a very long time.
And this person says, performance profiling with lots of plugins. We have too many customers or too many plugins having no idea which one makes the site slow. Then the host, which is them, get the blame. Mm-hmm. So I can see that. That's definitely seems like a concern. In fact, and for anyone out there who would like to check out a profiling plugin, I think P3 is out there. That one comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Query Monitor, I think, is another very popular one.
One of my favorites.
Lets you know what's going on the back end of WordPress. This person replies, the first thing that comes to mind is the fact that even experienced devs cannot easily contribute to Gutenberg development. It's so convoluted that I won't even know where to start. Second, clinging to the fear of breaking backwards compatibility and not modernizing core PHP more.
A bicycle is easier to maintain than a car. The classic editor, love it or hate it, was easier to work with, easier to build with, easier to hook into, easier to extend. And everyone was happy enough with the job that they were able to do with it. Was it amazing and super stellar and everyone loved it? I don't think that you're going to hear anyone say that about any piece of software, really, truly. It's pretty rare that everyone's like, this is so amazing. Everyone has to use it with anything, let alone WordPress or software. So, It's the same thing over and over and over again.
And for this gentleman, he says, Gutenberg and performance, how to strategize dealing with all of the new block CSS and if it's worth not using it and going from scratch or if that's not a sustainable idea and we're stuck with it.
My favorite, which should probably be no surprise, Keeping it simple and usable no matter one's ability, training, or device. Like that there, in a nutshell, is what got us here. I know that Matt has said that what got us here won't get us there, but you don't, if we get there and we abandon the usability and the accessibility side of it, then we haven't, however we got there poorly. So that was the one where I thought was my favorite.
And this one, scalability, security, poor leadership, and inconsistent decision-making for the direction of the entire project. This person says, seeing clients who don't know what Gutenberg is, trying to understand why their site isn't working like before. I love Gutenberg. Man, it has left non-power users confused. And this one, how the Black Editor works on mobile and its quirks. It will get better, though. It's automatic extra spacing, and creating new blocks means rejigging text for editors. It's much, much harder and time-consuming. And there are improvements, many improvements coming in the near future for the WordPress mobile apps and Gutenberg compatibility. And just a few more here to wrap it up. How to create new blocks in Gutenberg. Performance, again, was brought up. And besides security issues and kleptomaniac behavior from tech, persons at the top of WordPress.org, only permission for go-go dancers at camps and parties. That's quite the concern. Yeah. And this person says Twitter doesn't offer enough characters to get to the bottom of this. Basically, openness, open source versus closed project or close project. And last but not least, how WordPress the product is managed. So there you go. Kind of an overarching theme, and these are concerns that people have had for years and will continue to have, is performance, scalability, security, leadership, and decision making.
Right.
And those are pretty much the top five concerns that so many of us have. Yeah.
That anyone has with their government. the parallels, I'm channeling Morton, other friend of the show. All of those concerns go hand in hand with the same exact concerns that people would have for local, regional, national government. There's really not much difference between how an open source project strives for openness, transparency, security, leadership, than what people expect from elected officials. It's really all the same.
And speaking of Morton, and we might talk more about this next week, the WP Governance Project has released sort of the first sort of materials called Identifying the Stakeholders of WordPress, where they take on the task of identifying the personas making up the WordPress user base. I haven't given it a read yet. I'm going to do that today or later this week, and hopefully we could talk about that next week. But glad to see that there's momentum going forward on the WordPress Governance Project.
Me too.
With that, I found out today, thanks to Twitter, that today is my Twitterversary. I've been on Twitter for 12 years, so I've been polluting people's timelines for 12 years. And good God, I don't know what I've said in the past, 10 or 12 years ago that people can dig up on me and ruin my life. I'm sure there's many things. I'm sure there are drunk tweets that could be taken out of context. I don't know. But I've been on Twitter for 12 years, and sorry for all the people's timelines I've polluted.
Doesn't sound anything like you. 49,000 tweets is a lot of tweets.
Yeah. There's a lot of good life-ruining material.
Right. I mean, all of it.
I've got 49,000 tweets, so 49,100 tweets. That's a lot of tweets, man.
That's a lot. It just hearing the number makes me want to stop.
However, I've only got 8,120 followers. Half of those are bots with good-looking profile images. And I've got 10,600 likes. And quite honestly, likes, I use those more for like bookmarking things. It's a combination of either bookmarking something for later or kind of agreeing with somebody or agreeing with I don't like the term likes because it's not universal, but it has multiple purpose for me in terms of their use.
Yeah, I totally use it wrong too. And I tried to stop liking stuff for a while because I kind of just used it as like, I am acknowledging what you said, but I don't have anything like clever or to say back or anything to add.
Like I almost got in trouble by a couple of people who noticed that somebody was bad mouthing my boss or was saying something, and I happened to like one of their tweets, and I was doing it to bookmark it. I was saving it to reference it later.
Yeah.
And when people thought that or saw that I had liked the post, they thought that I was in agreement with them. And right. I got involved in this conversation that no, that like was a bookmark. It wasn't me agreeing with what they're saying about my boss. Right. So, you know, there's where the contextual, you know, intent of why you're liking a post matters.
Well, when people are actively trying to disagree with you or make you look bad, that those people they need to be blocked. Block those people. They're not healthy. They're not there to help anyone. Everyone can choose to find bad things about anyone in anything that they say. Those people just need to go away.
Anywho, joined in February 2007. So man, 12 years of Twitter. And I remember the early days of Twitter like it was yesterday, you know, the Jaikus and the Web 2.0 craze and missing vowels to be cool in your domain and Web 2.0 and gradients and buttons and button makers and
all using kinds zeros. Of cool stuff. It's using zeros instead of O's in your Twitter handle.
I don't want to prolong the show any longer, but I do miss to some effect, even though there were so many things that were stupid, but maybe that was one of the great things about it, that small period of time of what they call the Web 2.0 era, because it was just idea, after domain, after service, after API, and just all kinds of things, all these new things, and let's see what sticks. And you know, all these years later, we've seen what sticks, but man, what a cool craze that was, where everywhere you looked, there was something new popping up. Some new way of doing something or ordering something or sorting something. It was cool to live through that and be part of that in some way.
It's still happening. It's just happening without us. You know, it's happening.
When are we going to get to Web 3.0? I don't know. Was that VR or augmented reality maybe?
There won't be, because that won't be on the web. I mean, it'll barely be on the web. It'll be so long from now because it's just not, none of the web tech is there yet. But all the new emerging tech is happening not necessarily on the web. It's happening within all of the walled gardens that don't really survive necessarily directly alongside WordPress as a piece of software. They're happening inside Xbox Live. They're happening inside of...
There's a huge amount of innovative tech going on inside vehicles, let me tell you that.
Vehicles, I mean, it's the list of all of the other areas where it's been happening kind of has very little to do with the web in a browser. It has to do with the internet and the connectivity of things, but
I mean, my next vehicle purchase, if the heads up display is not compatible with Gutenberg blocks, I'm not buying it. What?
Yeah, I don't.
Figure that out there.
Your next vehicle should try and stay as far away from blocks as possible.
This is true. This is very true.
Keep it off of blocks and keep it away from hitting blocks.
My next vehicle purchase will run on lead gasoline. Gasoline with lead in it still.
it's an airplane. I mean, so it's a race car.
All right. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of WordPress Weekly. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes on WPTavern.com. And I'm sorry for the noises, but this new chair.
It's a little creaky.
It's
clicky.
The armrest. You can push them up or push them back. They're adjustable and they don't have a lock, which is one of the very annoying things I've discovered about this chair. So I apologize for the creaking noises if you've heard them.
Next week, those arms are broken. You will have broken those arms by next week.
Quite possibly. You can follow me on Twitter for another 12 years of timeline goodness at JEFFR0. And John?
JJJ.blog.
Oakley doakley. So we'll talk to you again next week for some more pressing issues of WordPress. Or who knows? Maybe we'll talk about the weather next week.
Weather.
For chair. Chair buying. Tips on buying chairs.
I hope next week there is less weather. I just want less.
All right. Say bye, John.
Bye, John.
Bye, everybody.